Topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com, and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence, and now here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Good morning, listeners, and I'm thrilled to be here with you. It's Tuesday morning, and of course, it's a really wonderful time because I get to spend time with you. So folks, thank you for those who have got our books, and whether it is Expert to Influencer or The Entrepreneur's Garden, thank you for getting it, because the profits from our books go to entrepreneurs across the globe through Kiva.org. And like usually, I'm going to invite you to give 1 hour of your time every month, no strings attached, to someone, because I'll tell you, a small act of kindness goes way bigger than an act of generosity. So definitely take that time out and help somebody. Let's invite our guest today, Dr. Samantha Pillay. Welcome, Samantha.
Hi, Divya. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Tell us, Sam, if you remember any remarkable moments from your childhood.
Remarkable moments from my childhood. Wow. I had a pretty traumatic childhood. So most of my strong memories relate to the fact that I was born with congenital hip dysplasia, and I failed to walk, and much of my childhood was spent actually as an inpatient in hospital and having a lot of surgery and learning to walk and starting school in a wheelchair. So they are obviously the strongest memories I have of those hurdles that I had to kind of overcome associated with that. They might not necessarily be remarkable in the sense of what you're talking about, but they're definitely by far the most impactful and strongest and defining memories I have, because they defined everything that what was to come. You know, my mobility was a really big issue.
To me, you are a remarkable woman. Because think about it, a child who should be running around and playing around to have to deal with that. If that's not remarkable, I don't know what is. So as a child, how did you handle it?
I think, you know, being born with that condition meant I didn't know any different. You know, I never knew what it was like to run. I never knew what it was like to, you know, play and keep up with the other kids. When I initially was in school and I was in a wheelchair, I couldn't move. In those days, the wheelchair wasn't the sort of thing that a child could move themselves. So I was totally dependent on other people. I had to gradually learn how to go upstairs, and how to manage my life in that way. I think not knowing what I was missing out on in some way was an advantage in the sense that I had no concept of what it was like to be able to do those things. There were a few defining moments when I realised that that was the way things were for me, so there was no wanting or wishing or hoping that things could be any different, and my life was going to be what I made of it. And realising that I had a choice to do everything I could to live the best life that I could, because it was very easy to imagine the worst life that I could live if I didn't work, if I wasn't able to live independently or look after myself, if I didn't push myself. So I think that was the start of me realising, first of all, that if I pushed myself, I could have a better result than if I didn't. And that was a choice of one thing and another. And then the fact that if I pushed myself, I could achieve goals and live a happier life. So determining what was actually, that there were still things in my power, even though obviously the condition from birth I had no control over, there was an understanding of very many things that I actually did have a control over that could determine my life, my success and my happiness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So tell us a bit more about your journey in your teenage and what interest did you have growing up?
There were a couple of things that come to mind. I remember as a teenager sort of having that aha moment when I realised no one wants to listen to someone who's sick. No one wants to, you know, and I didn't want people to feel sorry for me. There were plenty of people worse off than me. With surgery, I was able to walk. I just had a lot of pain. I had difficulty with distances or anything that was uneven ground or stairs and stuff, but I was still able to get around in unaided. So there were a lot of people worse off than me. And I realised that no one wants someone who's negative or, you know, as I say, wants to hear. No one wants to hear about your illness if you're sick. So that was something I sort of worked out in my teenage years. The other thing that led me on my path to become a surgeon was I did work. I actually work experience when I was 15 in cardiothoracic surgery. It was kind of crazy. I wrote a letter. I didn't know anyone who'd ever done work experience in surgery. And I wrote a letter to the head of the department at the Royal Adelaide Hospital where I live. And I was surprised that not only did I get an answer, but they said yes. So I was able to attend surgery. I was things that work experience students wouldn't get to do nowadays. I went to theatre. I got changed to theatre scrubs and was able to watch open heart surgery, heart bypass. I was on the wards from dawn till dusk, no matter how much pain I was in, learning how to take blood and putting drips and do ECGs and do all these amazing things that the doctors seemed very keen to hand off to a work experience school student. So that set me on the path to becoming a surgeon. And I always had to have this sort of goal, and I still do, that I had to push myself towards. And I think that kept me living in the future and took my mind off the present, and that was a way of dealing with the hip pain that I had, to not actually be in the here and now and be focused on something in the future. So obviously people said, when I did medicine, the last thing you want to do is surgery because you need to stand. But I was always in a situation where if there's a problem, I need to find a way to get around it. That's what it had been like since I was born. It wasn't like, don't do that. It's like, how can I do that? So that were probably two big things as a teenager that set me up for where I am.
Amazing. Amazing, Samantha. You're an inspiration to rest of the humanity. And I love it when people push themselves way, way beyond. So So how long did it take you to become a surgeon, and what's your specialty?
So obviously at medical school, an internship, basic surgical training, then I trained in urology. So that's about with medical school about 14 years. Then I did a further training and sub-specialised in the area of female urology, and I specialise in the treatment of urinary incontinence. So my practice now is predominantly female urinary incontinence treatments, and I've been in a practice as a surgeon now for 20 years. So it's more than 20 years since I finished my surgical training, which is I find hard to believe now. Yeah, so that's where I've been through. I've also worked. I was also interested in business, so I have set up and run my own practice, which I started from scratch. Now there's three surgeons and two GPs, so it's a centre that specialises in the treatment of female functional urology here in Adelaide, and I've been able to grow that business over the last 20 years as well. And so that's another one of my hats and one of my passions as a solopreneur and female founder.
Yeah, sounds like you have achieved a lot in your life. So, what would you say if you were to go back in time? What barriers have you overcome to become South Australia's first female surgeon in urology?
So obviously the physical barriers were by far the greatest barriers for me. The just simple things like being able to work in that sort of what I would say a normal, well, not more than a normal job because it's particularly long hours and quite a demanding job. That was a huge barrier for me because it seemed almost like I was on this precipice where if I really worked hard, I could have that life. And if I didn't, and I didn't look after myself and didn't maintain my health and my fitness and keep my weight down and do regular exercise, I would sort of slip into this situation where I wouldn't be able to work at all, and I'd be on, some sort of disability type of, support income. Yet on the other hand, I was able to sort of pull it up and managed to be a surgeon, which was far from a disability support income. And it was an it almost seemed like I really did have to push myself from one extreme to the other. So at times I was training 2 hours a day, whether that was physiotherapy, Pilates, strength work, like I was a full-time athlete, just to be able to front up to work. And it left very little time in the day for anything else. Much of my years with managing the pain, other than going to work, there wasn't much else I could do. I had a hip replacement 5 years ago, and that has significantly turned things around for me. When I was sort of 20, which was more than 30 years ago, that wasn't really an option. Hip replacements have got a lot better over the decades. And by the time I eventually had one, it was at the point where I was going to have to stop work because I could hardly, drive for more than 5 minutes or walk more than 1 kilometre in a day, or struggle to sort of dress myself or have a shower and wash my hair because I couldn't stand for that long of a time. So that's been my biggest hurdle. I'm fortunate that again, I've been pushing myself to do what people said I couldn't do, which was actually improve my level of function since hip replacement. So I'm very fortunate in my 50s to be better off than I was in my 40s, 30s, 20s, and teens, which is again a very amazing experience to now be able to do things I've never been able to do before. The other big barrier was gender barrier. As you said, I was the first female to do urology, especially in South Australia, but female surgeons were few and far between. So by the time I finished, less than 4% of surgeons were female, now fast track, you know, more than 20 years, and we're at 13%. So it's fairly glacial, the movement over the decades. But there were a number of gender biases that I faced, not necessarily a conscious bias, plenty of unconscious biases that I faced, you know, through my surgical training. For example, I mean, even just the little things like, you know, when I said I wanted to be a surgeon, you know, you don't get the same, I didn't get the same response as a female that a male would get. And, you know, people would be, oh, you know, oh, really? Why? You know, don't you want children? Which isn't the same response a male colleague would get when they said they wanted to be a surgeon.
And how did that make you feel?
I mean, you know, in the 1980s, I wasn't thinking, oh, this is an unconscious gender bias. You know, that's our society has evolved at that time. You know, I was very young. I finished school when I was 16. And I would say I learned to qualify my answer. I would say I want to do surgical training. I don't want to have children because I didn't want children at that stage of my life. I was still a child myself. It's interesting having, when you're in it, I don't think you really realise. I wasn't sort of out to make a point or make a stand and really just adapted to my environment. Now I look back, I can see, you know, how society's changed and the ways it shouldn't be. I remember when I was a registrar, we'd go to the pub on a Friday across the road from the hospital, and similarly, you know, I'd hear my male colleagues who were surgeons in training maybe talking to some young woman at the bar, and when asked what they did, they'd say, oh, I'm a surgeon, and I'd just be like, you know, they're not a surgeon, they want to be a surgeon. If they pass their exams, they'll be a surgeon. And I'd never think of speaking like that. But in actual fact, as a female, that in the, you know, those all those years ago, definitely in Adelaide, wasn't something that would be seen as a positive. It was actually a conversation killer if I sort of said to some young man that I met that I was training to be a surgeon, and it to the point that I actually used to lie when I first met people about what I did. And that just is a reflection of what the times were. Hopefully that wouldn't be the case now, but it does create barriers for women and an understanding of society's stereotypes and how society defines people and what their expectations are for men and women. I remember when I went, I'd been a surgeon for 5 years, and when I had my son and I went back to work when he was 6 weeks old, he came into work with me. I was getting him out the back of the car with the baby capsule when one of the nurses at the hospital came running up, said, you can't park here. These car parks are for the doctors. I've been parking in the same spot as a surgeon for 5 years, and I realise now not only do people see me as a woman, but they also saw me as a mother. So that's one of the reasons I've been so passionate to create role models that have visibility for young women and to break career gender stereotypes so that other young girls don't have those sorts of issues that they have to deal with, and they can just pursue whatever their passions are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Times have changed immensely, and we are seeing an influx of women from boardrooms to workforce to entrepreneurship. And that said, there, as you said, something very poignant was that, like, a guy would go ahead and say that I'm a surgeon without even thinking twice, and you lied about it because you were not sure how it would be taken by a young man. So many times what happens is that women tend to underplay who they are. And can you share what's the reason behind it and how they can just be themselves without being a braggart?
Well, I think, I mean, there's lots of different circumstances. In that particular circumstance, I found that it was, at that age, really would result in someone who didn't really know what to expect. It didn't fit what they would define a woman should be, and it possibly created a situation where they felt insecure or uncertain because they felt maybe that was something that was more important or prestigious or whatever than what they themselves did, and that created an imbalance of power or imbalance of what society expected as the role for a man and for a woman. So women are underplaying their, it does highlight, I think, what's talked about a lot in the business world of male confidence over their ability and qualification, and on the flip side, women's lack of confidence or ability to promote who they are, what they do, or ability to perform. Saying that, despite that was really a gender situation, when it comes to my professional abilities as far as a surgeon, so that not in a relationship situation, but as far as my abilities for a surgeon, I haven't felt that, I've had to downplay my surgical skills or my business skills or anything like that. It does have a lot to do with society's expectations. So career gender stereotypes is something that I am quite passionate about. That there's been a lot of work that shows that, you know, these start to form at the age of 3 years of age. We expect teenagers to start to look at what they want to do for their careers in, you know, high school, in the latter years. By then, stereotypes for career genders have already formed. And society also projects onto children what they think a girl should be, what they think a boy should be, in many different ways regarding their gender. So that's what led me to write a series of children's picture books to try and change the stereotypes around different careers for young girls.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what are your books about?
So the first book was When I'm a Surgeon. So the protagonist is a girl, and it's about trying to instill self-belief or self-efficacy in young girls from an early age, because I think that is the fundamental foundation. Once they have that self-belief that they can achieve their goals, then they will overcome those barriers. Then they will find a way. They will solve the problems. The, you can't be what you can't see. And I don't necessarily want every girl to be a surgeon, but I want every girl to be able to believe that she could be a surgeon, or be able to dream for a while that she could be a surgeon. That was where it started. And then it's evolved into a book series. So the second book was When I'm an Entrepreneur, and talks about the key qualities relating to entrepreneurship. And When I Was a Surgeon was also covering the roles that a surgeon can have, especially for my own journey, beyond what the tradition is of just the operating theatre. You know, I've been able to teach there's surgeons that are involved in scientific discoveries, they might be involved in leadership. There's many roles that that we can have with our career. Right now I'm in the process of working on book three, which is When I'm an Astronaut. And the idea is that it gives girls an opportunity to dream about being in what may be a male-dominated career.
Mm-hmm. Very powerful. So, Samantha, could you share with us, you did mention you have a son, and how is your relationship with your kids?
So I've got one son, he's 14. I'm a single mum. Which has, again, had its other challenges on top of everything else. We have a very, very close relationship. I have really worked hard to manage my work life as a business owner and surgeon to, I think entrepreneurship does have some flexibility that makes women, it's particularly appealing, I think, to women in the ability of any role where you work for yourself and you can call your own hours and you can work from home has definite advantages for when you're trying to juggle parenting. And so that has allowed me some flexibility to be able to have heavier clinical loads, say during the school term, with more administrative load work, working from home during school holidays. And we've had a very close relationship. And one of the other areas that I write about is how I think this idea of the workplace being one thing and then family life being separate, which was traditionally a way of work that was developed in a male dominant way of this separation of work and family life. Now that then led to this constant push-pull of work-life balance of, you know, more time for work success, more time for family success. Whereas the ability to integrate work and family life and find ways that through your work that you can spend more time with your kids. So that might have been, you know, I mean, my son can text and type faster than I can. He can look things up on the internet. He can take notes. He can run tech equipment. He's listened to so many and been to so many presentations over the years that he's a very good public speaker. So there's so many opportunities that he's got through my work, through networking, people he's had opportunities to meet, that my career has given him those opportunities, and without my career he wouldn't have had any of those opportunities. And combining that work and his ability to help in work has given him skills but also allowed my work to be a way for us to have time together. And I don't think people look at their work as a way to spend quality time with their kids, or don't look at it enough.
That's powerful, looking at it from another perspective, that because you may be a working mom doesn't mean you cannot have that beautiful relationship with your children, because you are presenting them with opportunities that they would not otherwise have. So that's a very powerful way to take a look at it. And I know you have got some hacks around success and happiness. Why don't you share those with us?
Yes, I think there's been a few things that I have come to realize over the years, again, where I have been able to control or make a difference. I think it's very easy in life to sort of not realize the power that I didn't realize the power I had to create the life that I wanted. And I think it comes back to that realizing there are those things that you can't change, but then that when you think about the things that you can change, I was like, well, why would I not change the things that I can change, because I'm stuck with the things that I can't change. So when it comes to health, I mean, that's another area that I've written about. So I write articles on my website relating to health and all the other things that we've talked about. The 80% of chronic disease is preventable, and as a surgeon I see people who have significant chronic disease risk factors that can impact on their quality of life. I think COVID's reset people's priorities for health. It's also brought home what those chronic disease risk factors are and what the difference it can make in people's outcome just from the same condition. So with that, one of the things that I became conscious of was looking after my health from the point of view of exercise and diet. Now, I was, and especially because of my limited mobility, I had to be really careful with my weight. I couldn't carry a 1 kilo handbag because the pain was so bad that just even 1 kilo was too much, increased the pain too much before I had my hip replacement. Just in the lead up to that, when it was at its worst. So managing and then trying to manage my weight when I couldn't exercise, I probably then was more successful and more motivated to manage my weight than if I hadn't had a problem. And that led to being passionate about healthy eating. I wrote the No Recipe Cookbook, which was another thing that I wanted to motivate those people who didn't cook. I wrote a cookbook for people who didn't cook to try and be able to have basic home cooking that was nutritious and not reliant on high calorie, high salt, high fat processed foods where they were either eating out at restaurants or convenience foods or meal deliveries, takeout, etc. So one of those, I think, your health, when you're talking about the keys to success or happiness, health is by far the number one thing. And that's what I see taken away from people through my work as a surgeon. So that was one thing I was able to look at, all those dietary factors that people just tend to ignore, whether it be their cholesterol, their salt, their blood pressure, and their weight. I had a bit of a wake-up call where, I've really had to work hard not to gain weight, and I had a normal BMI, but there's a research that shows that your waist measurement is actually more important than your BMI. And for a woman, if your waist is more than 31.5 inches, you've got an increased risk of heart attack, stroke and death. So, you can have a normal BMI and still be at risk. There's other aspects to success, I think, relate to what you choose to do with your time. And that was another realization I had. We all have the same 24 hours. Yet when you're more conscious about how you choose to spend your time, as in spending your time in things that you enjoy or things that make you happy, and making a conscious decision, you make a conscious decision about how you choose to spend your time. And that was a really key thing for me. That led to me realizing that, working as many hours as I could as a surgeon, which I'd done for many, many years, wasn't necessarily everything that I wanted to do in my life. I did enjoy my business and, I was always working Saturdays and Sundays and late at night and the crack of dawn, and so making time for that, time to write about the things that I was passionate about and do the children's book. And then I suppose the last thing that I'd add to that, in not just of what you do with your time, looking after your health, is the people you spend your time with. And that's the other thing that creates, I think, the your happiness in life is making sure you spend your time with the people that make you happy, and either minimizing the time or avoiding the time you spend with the people that bring you unhappiness, or else doing something to improve the situation so they don't bring you unhappiness anymore. But that's another key, I think, to your happiness.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely some great points over there. So you have shared some very powerful nuggets today. And Samantha, if people wanted to reach out to you, get your books, where can they find your books and where can they connect with you?
So the easiest way would be through my website, samanthapillay.com. There's the links to all my social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. There's also information and links to the books, information about the books. There's some free meal ideas from the No Recipe Cookbook that people can download for free. If you've got little ones, there's colouring pages from the activity books for When I'm a Surgeon and When I'm an Entrepreneur that people can download for free. The books are for sale on Amazon and all the online retailers in print and ebook versions.
Well, fantastic. So what is one last tip that you'd like our listeners to leave with?
I have two. When I'm talking to kids, I think the biggest thing I say to them is dream big, aim high. That's one of the things I probably didn't dream big enough, didn't aim high enough. When I was young, I didn't really have the courage to dream big or aim high, and I'm finding that now as I get older. But it's not just something for little kids. I think you're never too old to dare to dream big and aim high.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, thank you for joining us, Samantha.
Thank you, David.
I wish you well in all your future endeavors as you continue to shine the light for others and keep on doing your wonderful work to impact people. What a journey.
Thank you very much. And I wish all the best for you and your show. And thank you very much for having me on it.
Oh, my pleasure. And thank you, listeners, for joining us, because without you, the show would not be possible. And I want to take this moment and thank you from my heart for sharing your thoughts and what is it that you like to have and how we can help you. So continue sharing your love with us, and we love you right back. So take good care of yourself, and thank you, Jason. Be well and powerful until next time.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week.